everyone. Welcome to another episode of She Runs Trails. I am your host, Elements of Daisy. Today's guest, we have Leah, also known as Leah_Yingling on Instagram. If you guys do not know her, she's a professional ultra runner for Salomon. She's been running since 2015. She recently ran Western States and got sixth place. She's a very competitive runner. I just actually discovered her this year when she ran Bandera. And then she was running that to qualify for Western State. She got third place, but then she ran again. She ran Canyons, and then she got second place, which got her the Golden State ticket to win to run Western States this year. I'm super excited to bring her along. Thank you everyone for joining today. Thank you so much, Leah, for joining me today. Again, congratulations on Western States.
Thank you so much. It was incredible.
And I was like looking at the time. It's like it was a really fast race compared to previous years.
Yeah, I swear the race is getting faster and faster. And I think people are just running it smarter and smarter every year. So it made for a really fun day out there and one I can't stop thinking about. So amazing.
Sure, it's like one for the books for the rest of your life, huh?
Oh, 100%.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into ultra running?
Yeah, so I live in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I've been out here since 2016. My husband Mike and I moved out here. I moved out here for grad school, and then he followed me out here in 2017. And I would say that's largely when my ultra running took off. I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and I was living in D.C. In 2014 or so, and I think in 2015 was when I ran my first 50K back in, I think it was in Virginia at the time. So my now husband, he had been really into ultra running for many years through college and whatnot. So he kind of introduced me to them in our first summer dating. We spent a lot of our long distance relationship traveling kind of between Washington, D.C. and Virginia Beach, finding races to do and whatnot. But it was a great way to spend our first summer together. But then I would say my ultra running in particular really took off when I moved to Utah for grad school. Being in Salt Lake City, you're really close to a lot of huge mountains that make it hard to ever want to run the roads. So not a terrible place to be and not a bad place to keep increasing the distance year after year. And I think I've settled in with 100 miles being my favorite distance.
And this is your third 100, right? So you did Bear twice and then yep. Western States. So it's a completely different race, having this big, more of a mountain, longer run versus Western States, where it's more of a fast paced race. Like how did that, like, was it anything unexpected that you had compared to like from Bear and Western States?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Bear, I'm very familiar with. It's takes place just an hour or so north of Salt Lake City. And a lot of the terrain you see in the Bear is very similar to stuff I train on every day around here. So I would say in terms of expectedness, like I anticipate exactly what the Bear is. I can train on very similar stuff. Western States is interesting for a variety of reasons. One, the heat is just such a variable. And the second for me is just the extensive downhill that is in that race. So if, for those of you unfamiliar, it's I think 22,000 or so feet of uphill, I mean of downhill, and 18,000 feet or so of uphill in the race. So it still is quite a climbing race to some degree, but you really have to have like pretty seasoned quads to survive late in the race. So that wasn't something I necessarily trained for, but I think a lot of the mountain training I do in general prepared me well for that. So it wasn't too challenging come race day, but I do think that's a big challenge for those who don't have the opportunity and the privilege to train on a lot of the mountains like we have out in the Mountain West.
And what was the highlight of there? I'm sure there was many moments. It's, you know, it's 100 miles. It took you about what, a little over 18 and a half hours. So a lot could happen in that almost 20 a whole day. What would you say is like the highlight of Western States for you?
Oh man, that's a really hard question. I think mile 94 was really special for me. I kind of planned my pacers in the race. So I had three pacers total. I had two of my good friends and my husband, Mike, was my final pacer. And I have just some weird psychology around pacing where I get really weak when I'm with my husband, whenever he's pacing me. And so in past races, he's joined me for, you know, 10 and 15, 20 miles at different points in time during the race. But I knew for Western States, if I had him anywhere except for the last 6 miles, if it came down to racing, I just know I get really vulnerable and really weak with him. So I knew I wanted to plant him at mile 94. So I had a great section with my friend Matt that was pacing me right beforehand, but I was really anticipating getting to Mike at mile 94 to share the last hour or so with him. So I think that final moment of reaching him and being like, okay, we made it to this point, like, let's have fun for this last hour. It wasn't fun at the time. I was pretty miserable, but in my mind, I was looking forward to it all day long. So I think having that positive mindset and that anticipation and almost like having these little milestones for yourself really helps you keep stay engaged for a long race, like 100 miles, but also keep you excited. And I think that's my whole crew in general would be the large highlight of my day. My dad came out to the race and told me about 10 days prior. He joined from Pennsylvania and it was his first 100 mile that he got to witness. So, I mean, sharing 100 meters on the track with him was really special. And I could just go on and on. So many good days, but I think a lot of them definitely come down to all my interactions with my crew and my pacers.
It's sharing the experience with your loved ones, right? Like,
it's exactly.
Crossing that finish line, if there's nobody like your dad or your spouse there, you're just kind of like, you know, there's millions of people out there, but if it's not the people that mean the world to you, it does make a difference. And will you recommend for people, like, if they feel like, hey, having that person near the end to help you push or have something to look forward to, especially when you're kind of suffering throughout the day?
Oh yeah. Like, I think knowing yourself and your needs is really important. So like, there's some races where, yeah, maybe I'm running through a lot of the night and Mike is the person I want to pace me for 20 miles. But then I know with myself in this race, it's like, oh, I might want to be racing that last little bit. And I know he can get like every little ounce out of me a lot of the time. So I think knowing what your needs are and knowing who fulfills those needs at different times during the race, and knowing like what kind of mindset you want to be in. So I think early in the race, I didn't want to quite be racing yet, but I had a pacer and I said, hey, I'm not going to talk much, but we're going to have fun and you're just going to be my company. So if I talk to you, great, but just be prepared for me to not be that fun. So just setting expectations and knowing like who fits where, I think that's definitely plays a big piece in the puzzle.
Yeah, that's great advice. Knowing yourself and what you need at what point in a race, because exactly. Everyone is different. What works for you may not work for someone else, but really the self-awareness, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the lowest point, like your point where you're just like, oh my God, like, why am I here? Or, you know, that when your why starts coming out.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah. Again? You know, I think I'm lucky when I say this, but like I had nearly a picture perfect day with no lows really whatsoever. I do like, so my biggest low of the day was around mile 65. I've had some like ins and outs of, just calf, not really an injury this year, but just like never feeling 100%. But I was actually feeling great going into Western States. And around mile 65, I had a cramp in my left calf. And I was like, oh, it's probably just a cramp. Just something salt will solve, or like not taking salt, or maybe taking salt, figuring out my electrolytes. Mm-hmm. So the whole time from probably mile 65 to 70, I'm trying to solve this in my head. And it's not really going away. And then I think it hit me. I was like, I'm probably strained my calf or did a little something. So like, you just need to live with this. You got 30 miles left and you're not going to make this break your race. So, you know, pain is pretty temporary. So just like keep pushing and you can worry about this when you get to the finish line. So I would say that was my biggest low of the day, which at the end of the day, once I kind of put it to the back of my mind, it didn't affect me too much, but yeah, was present.
When doing a race and you have moments like that, like when have you ever had in the past where you're just like, no, this could, if I keep going, this could be a potential injury. Like, you know, cause there's a point where you push your limits, but there's only certain limits where you're just like, wait, this limit might have really bad consequences later on. Like, how do you distinguish those limits for yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have DNF'd in a race before, and I think recognizing when it really is like a health issue or an injury, and just trying to distinguish between those feelings of, okay, is this health? Is this an injury? I always think that's a good decision to drop out if you need to in those cases. But if it's more of just like a mental fatigue or this is getting hard, I think for myself, you know, I'd have a hard time dealing with those feelings, like if I just gave up, if it was more like a mental thing. But my husband and I, in recent years, I feel like there's been this mentality in ultra running that's like, you know, you finish at all costs. And I'm not necessarily on board with that, that phrasing and that idea, because I think a lot of the times, you know what you want to get out of a race. And if it's a finish, that's great. But if it's just an experience, and if it's a positive experience, and you're starting to have a really negative experience, I think that's totally okay to pull the plug. I think everybody has their reasons for doing so. So I think going into the race with, like, you know, what are you willing, like, what are you willing to do? When is it smart to DNF? And just having those things that you tell yourself, but also tell your crew, I think is really important to kind of keep you in track when you get tired, or when you, like, maybe if you do get injured.
What's your breaking point? Like, what have you ever, because you say you DNF, what was the reason you DNF'd?
The one time I dropped out was due to, like, I think it was about to be potential kidney issues, like rhabdo. I was in a race in, it was one of the UTMB races in Europe. I was running TDS and just did wonky things with my electrolytes that day. And I could tell I was having some back pain, which I think was kidney pain, which then my mind spirals and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be rhabdo if I keep going. So making the call there that I think it was at mile 40, about halfway through, that, okay, this isn't worth my health, because I know that rhabdo has pretty severe consequences. But ever since then, it's been a pretty positive experience with racing, and I haven't had too many, like, big lows or any close calls where I've had to, you know, make some tough calls. So I'm lucky in that sense.
Yeah, there's actually a question. I'm going to pull it up right now. There's a question from Soraya. What type of injuries have you dealt with, and how did you resolve them?
I have not had a ton of, I have never had, like, a bone injury. I think if anything that I deal with typically ends up being tendonitis or something along those lines. So the one year I dealt with hamstring tendonitis in my lower hamstring for a few weeks. And I think it's really easy to get down in the dumps about things like that. For me, I took like 2 weeks off and then returned to running pretty slowly, but then also really started focusing on strength training. Strength training is something I've really incorporated over the last, I'd say, 3 years. And I think that's helped me be pretty resilient in my ability to not have injuries. And I also think I have like zero limitations when it comes to food and whatnot. So I eat a lot. I'm not concerned about, you know, I'm not concerned about how much I'm eating in a day. I just know that, like, the amount that I'm running, it needs a lot of fuel to sustain it. And that's an okay thing. And I perform better when I'm, like, well nourished. So I think balancing those elements of strength training and fueling my body, and really just not having many limitations there, has helped me stay pretty injury free. But I think also being okay with not being okay when you do have injuries. It's easy to see people, like, for example, coming back from Western States, it's really easy to see a lot of people return to running really fast afterwards, you know, a week after, 2 weeks after. But it's okay to be on your own terms. Like, I know for myself, I returned after about like 2 full weeks off, maybe 2.5 full weeks off, and just tried to ignore what everybody else was doing, because I was like, hey, I know my body, I know what's good for me. And at the end of the day, like, leaving the peer pressure element out of it serves you best.
How do you deal with comparison? Like, you know, you talk a little bit about the seeing other people, and then even being a professional athlete now, you have that pressure of like, okay, how much time can I take off, or what, how soon can I go quickly if you have an upcoming goal? How do you kind of block that comparing yourself to others? And it's so hard with social media, Strava, you're constantly on leaderboards, you know, it's so hard not to. Like, what has helped you kind of just, you know, put those guards on the side and just focus on yourself and allow yourself to be on your own journey? Because it seems like that's kind of what you do. And we'll go later on your race strategy, but like, what has helped you kind of stay on your lane?
Yeah, there's a few things. So I think one is having a full-time job really helps me stay structured and not overdo it. So I have a full-time job outside of running. So I run when I can fit it in. And if I don't have the mental energy that day because of stress from work, I recognize that stress is stress. So exercise is stress, mental health is stress, you know, not sleeping is stress. So it all adds up. And recognizing that there might be certain days where, you know, I just can't bring myself to go for a run, and that's totally okay. So giving myself the grace to not do what's on the schedule that day. I do have a coach, Megan Roach, and she's phenomenal. And it gives me a lot of accountability for trying to stick to my schedule the best I can. But she's also super understanding if something just doesn't jive that day. So I think being able to give yourself grace, but then also having somebody that does have some amount of, you do have some amount of accountability too. And I think another thing that helps me keep a good balance is I do about 80 to 90% of my running with other people. And I do that for a variety of reasons. But one is just I love the community. I love sharing running with other people. And running for me is an outlet and it's my social time. So I think when I structure my runs with different people, it allows for me to go at a nice pace, like a pace where I'm talking, a pace where I'm just enjoying it and there's no pressure. And then like I have my maybe 1 or 2 days a week where I do a workout and that's great. But I think having a nice balance and a balance, with my professional life, balance with, the amount that I run and, the pace that I run and things like that. I think that definitely helps at the end of the day. And recognizing that I know what works for me. And I've been ultra running now for almost 7 years. And I know I'm not going to be somebody's an athlete that, clocks 100 miles a week. And that's okay because I've seen success with what I do. So just putting the blinders on in that sense of like, okay, I'm Leah, and this is what works for Leah, and it doesn't really matter what anybody else is doing because I can get from point A to point B that way.
What advice do you give someone who's currently in that phase where they're trying to figure out what works for them, but they just seem so overwhelmed and they get burned out? Because most of us are working full time. Like even yourself, being a professional runner, you still have a full time job. So you have like two full time jobs right now. And if you're running that many, 80 miles a week, it is about, a minimum 20 hours a week, right? Like you'll feel like it's a part time hour job. What advice would you give that person who's kind of trying to figure that balance between the, the full-time job, the day-to-day, being a partner, being, a mother or something, like having this life responsibility and then trying to commit to their goal and passion on the side?
I think what is very helpful is like setting a time and setting a place, setting somebody that you're meeting that day. So at the beginning of the week, knowing that, okay, my Tuesday is going to be wild with work and I'm not going to be able to go for a run unless I get it done at, 5:30 in the morning. So trying to find a buddy that you can share those miles with in the morning to really keep you accountable. I think that's been very helpful for me when I know I have a really busy week, like with my professional job and whatnot. It's filling those times when I do know I have a break in my schedule. And I think for people getting into the sport, finding a mentor in your community, if possible, who's been where you are, who has similar experience and who's willing to share their experiences with you, I think that can go such a long way. I know when I was getting into the sport, my husband had been doing it for years and years, and he was just such a great person to bounce ideas off of. And we learned together. Like, I think his ultra running has grown a bunch since we've been together, but so has mine. And I think we've been able to teach each other different things. So I really think there's huge value in finding a mentor, whether it's male or female, but like somebody in the community that can, add some value and add some insight and an outside perspective to what you're doing.
So you're doing all this. There has to be a why. Why do you run ultras? What's your why?
I like to see what I'm capable of at the end of the day. Something I tell myself during running is like you can do hard things, and like I'm well aware of that at this point. But I really do like to test my limits and just see what I can get out of myself. It's exciting and it's challenging, and I really like being able to see growth year after year with it. Not only is it a way that I get to hang out with the community and share experiences with other people, but I think on the personal level, it's really satisfying to see a goal met at the end of the day and see just like the years and the culmination of training and, science and thinking and just learning that goes into it. It's just like any goal in life. A lot goes into it. And I love the progression of it. Like, I always tell people, like, I enjoy racing, but at the end of the day, I really enjoy training. It's fun and I love seeing progress. And it's not always progress. It's never, a linear progression with anything. But I think year in and year out, you learn a little bit more about yourself. And I think that's a pretty satisfying feeling.
Was there a race or a training run or somewhere in particular where you realized, like, oh man, I'm actually pretty good at this? Like, like, were you surprised that you were actually like, I could be top 10? And like, you know, you were sixth place at Western States, where you have all these competitive, very competitive. You have Camille Heron just chasing you right behind you. Like,
which is terrifying.
How does that feel, knowing that you have this amazing athlete chasing you?
So I love thinking back on from where I started ultra running and, you know, when the wheels were turning early on and then when things started finally clicking. For me, I actually do remember like vividly a race in 2018. It was a race, a 50 miler here in Utah that I had done. And I had time goals for the day and I knew what I was probably capable of, but it was my first really mountainous 50 miler. And I ended up breaking the course record that day completely unknowingly, having no idea like even what the course record was and just running my race. And it was that day where I was like, oh, wow. Like I remember like in my little Strava that day, I said it was like one of those days where the stars aligned. And then it was after that, I felt like I was just having a couple races where I was like, man, it was just the stars aligned today. It was just one of those perfect days. But I think it was that culmination of like training coming together, like my years of running coming together, and then finally just being a little bit more thoughtful about how you race and like the things you need to do to race well. All those pieces coming together all at the same time. So yeah, maybe the stars were aligning, but I think it was, you know, a lot of work went into it and it all came together at a really nice time.
When you got a coach, I'm just gonna ask, why did you get a coach? Why did you decide to get a coach?
Yeah, so I got a coach. I started working with Megan in the winter of 2017, I believe, right around December 2017, January 2018. And that summer, so I had been out in Utah for roughly a year in grad school. And then my husband, Mike, moved out here the next year after he got out of the Navy. And we would just get carried away in the mountains. We would be doing all these adventure runs on the weekends. And it was awesome. Like, we had so much fun. But it came to the point where I'd sign up for races and we would have done like a 30 mile adventure run the weekend prior. We were doing big mountain runs during the week. And I was like, okay, I just need consistency. I need structure. And like, I need to start working on like the little things. So, you know, taking a day off every week and doing a little bit of speed work and, you know, doing consistent long runs and back-to-back long runs. So really I needed accountability and consistency because I knew if I was left to my own devices, it was going to be bad news. So it's been amazing. And I mean, we have such a good relationship and I mean, we're going, you know, four or 5 years strong now. And I wouldn't have it any other way. It definitely keeps me grounded and like keeps me on target every week. Like I don't follow things perfectly. But it gives me the structure that I very desperately needed.
Any point did you see yourself like, I want to be a professional runner, or you saw yourself as going that direction? Or working towards that direction?
Yeah, no, actually. And I still really don't think of myself that way. And I think having like a full-time job like helps me not feel that way, which is pretty nice. Because I enjoy running and at the end of the day, like it's a hobby and like I'm decent at it, but it's not the end all be all. So like at no point in time was that actually ever on my mind. And I feel like the stars did align in that respect. But yeah, it's something I'm super grateful for. And I've had a lot of opportunities, especially the last couple of years because of it. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Will you be surprised if one day, like you're able to get like a full on contract with Solomon and the fact where you're like able to quit your full-time job and you're like, oh man, do you like, how does that idea, even just thinking about that, like, how does that feel for you?
Yeah, I was just asked that question the other day and I was like, I don't think I'd ever quit my job. Like, I really enjoy my job. I think if anything, maybe eventually I'd work, like move down part-time or something, but I enjoy it. It keeps me busy. And I think that's part of the reason I've stayed healthy in the sport and, you know, have longevity. I think it's easy to get carried away, whether that's with training and racing and whatnot. So I think for me, it's exciting to think about, but at the same time, I also want a family eventually. And you know, I enjoy my work and I enjoy running. And I think I'm just going to hopefully keep maintaining a nice balance with that. And I do have a lot of inspiration from other women in our sport who do work full time. They're moms. They do a lot. They juggle a ton. And I think we're seeing a little bit more of that and a little bit more conversations around that. So I'm really excited to like keep being a woman in the sport because we have so much to learn and so many great mentors out there who are teaching us their ways.
I'm actually really happy you're sharing this, because being a woman, this is one of the reasons why I have this podcast. As you know, like, the prime time for ultra running is between 35 and 45. Like, that's really where you hit your prime, you know, generally, yeah, plus or minus a few years. But for women in the 30s, that's usually when you get married and start thinking about building a family. So, you know, man, they could become a father, they can pick up quickly, but the woman body, you have a baby, it takes time. And it's amazing what some ultra running women are doing, you know, breastfeeding at aid stations, absolutely, and, you know, going, picking up trail running right after. But it's, I love what you said, that even though you may have the opportunity of, you know, if you did have the opportunity of quitting your job, like, you still want that balance. And I think it's really beautiful. Like, it's okay to want it both. It's okay to want ultra running and want a life where you're doing what you study for, right? What you went after, and building a life with someone you love as well. So thank you so much for sharing that. You don't really hear that. A lot of people think it's like one or the other, like you have to pick, but you don't have to pick.
No, and it means a lot to me too, because like you're allowed to have different values in life. You're allowed to have things that exist in your life and in your mind that take up equal space. And maybe there's times of your life where they take up a little bit more space, and that's okay. And what I do appreciate is I do think companies are moving towards a more open and accepting like sponsorship opportunities for women who do go on to have families. At least that's my hope, and that's what I've heard. So I think we'll be seeing a couple more doors open with respect to that over the next couple of years. And what I do think is really great is how open a lot of the new moms in ultra running have been about their experiences. Because it's really easy to see, like, oh, it was really easy for that person to return to running and running competitively. But then other people, like, they voice their struggles. And it's really nice to know that, yeah, it's not going to be just, you know, one size fits all. It's a variety of experiences you can have. And, you know, that's, if you want a family, like, that's what it takes. And that's okay.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I believe that it's important as women that we kind of speak up of what we really want and not just be like, okay, I guess I'm giving up family so that I could be a professional, when you really don't want that, because then later on in life you might resent running for not building the family you wanted, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's easy. I mean, it's easy to like push it off year after year after year. But like, yeah, it's nice to see that there's a lot of women who are still very much competitive runners who are, you know, announcing pregnancies and whatnot, and still seeing that they're supported, which is, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. I want to talk a little bit about your golden ticket. So you ran earlier this year, you do Bandera, you know, your goal was to get the golden ticket. You get third place, and then you try again. Like, what is, I want to talk about like that feeling of not reaching your goal the first time.
Yeah.
And going after it the second time. Like, a lot of people will get discouraged after that first time attempting something, giving all they got. Like, what helped you kind of not let that first race define you and go after Canyon's 100K?
Yeah, I am so grateful for Bandera this year. I think if it weren't for Bandera, I probably wouldn't have went on to have the few races that I did to follow that. So while it was super disappointing in the moment, you know, and it was actually like less disappointing than I would have thought it was going to be, because yes, I had, you know, a big goal for Bandera. I wasn't like super inspired by the course or anything either. And I think that helped me sit with my feelings a little bit more. I was like, oh, I just don't love that race. But it was disappointing to some degree afterwards, but there was a few things that I learned about myself, about my race day nutrition and whatnot in Bandera, that I ended up tweaking quite a few things for my spring races at like I ran Grand Canaria 40 miler, and then Gorge 50K, and then Canyons especially. Like, I was able to implement all the little things, and like with each race I did, I was able to like tweak a little bit more. So then when it all came together at Canyons, it was pretty flawless. And I'm so grateful for having a bad day. I mean, relatively speaking, at Bandera, like, I had a good day for 50 miles and then things went pretty south for 10. So I'm grateful that that happened, because I don't think things would have came together as nicely as they did later on in the season if it weren't for that.
And let's talk a little bit about your planning for these races. I've heard through the grapevine, like, you're a great planner. You love to plan for your races. Like, I want to know, like, how do you go about your planning? Like, what
how soon, how much do you plan for your races? Like, what has really helped you plan for your races? What goes into your running? And what do you feel like, as, because it seems like that's helping you, has been working.
Oh, totally, totally. I think being a planner, which is funny because I'm not much of a planner in any other aspect of my life. But I think just putting the work in planning for the races helps tenfold when you get to the race, because in a lot of the races that I do extensive planning, you know, I'm running 100K, I'm running 100 miles. Like, I'm 10 hours deep into a race. I don't know what I want, you know, but yesterday Leah does know what she's going to want. So if I can plan with that in mind of like, okay, I know what I'll likely want, you know, plan for that the best you can. So usually I'm a big spreadsheet person for these races, and I have my nutrition down to what I'm doing every 20 to 30 minutes. So just calculating out exactly like, what will I be eating, you know, for this hour and then this hour. And then, okay, I should be at this point of the race around 3 hours. That means I should have eaten, you know, 9 gels by that point. And then at this aid station, I'll have a pack filled with another 9 gels and my bottles. And I have little note cards that I have my crew. I tell them exactly what I want in that pack, and they'll give me my pack and I'll get off running. So I think there's a lot of time savings by just planning even a little bit for your races. And if you can like predict to some degree estimated times of when you should be arriving at aid stations or the finish or crew spots, et cetera, it helps your crew a ton. But I think it also helps you stay on schedule a little bit better and pace it well.
What has happened when things don't go according to plan? Like, let's say you had a gel. You were like, you had like, I want 5 gels in this section. And then when you get to the station, you're like, no gels. I can't take one single gel. Like, what, when things like that happen, how do you adjust to your planning so that your planning doesn't take, you know, mentally you're like, oh crap, like this is not going to plan.
I think, that's a good question. I think a lot of ultra running is just troubleshooting and problem solving in general. So I think I go into the race recognizing that things aren't going to be perfect, and then that's okay. And trying to work with what you have. So I have a great story from last year. My mom came out to Utah to see me run a 50 miler. And my husband, Mike, was carting her around in the car all day to see me. And he had this grand idea of seeing me at mile 10 and then taking her along this like pretty rough road to see me around mile 26. And then they'd give me everything I needed for the second half of the race. Turns out that road was not passable in their car. And he nearly rolled the car with my mom in it and ended up not being able to get to mile 26 to see me. And they had everything that I needed for the second half of the race. So then I was like, okay, well, I have a pretty strict nutrition plan in races. That's okay. Like, work with what you got at these aid stations. So say I normally eat, you know, 300 calorie gels in an hour. It's doing the math of like, okay, let me figure out what I can eat at the aid stations to get 300 calories in an hour and whatnot. So just being able to be flexible and like knowing yourself well enough and knowing what you can do to be adaptable in those moments and being okay with it and recognizing like not everything is always going to go to plan. So how can you adapt best to kind of roll with the punches?
What does your nutrition, what does nutrition look for you for races? And then we can talk about like outside of racing, like training runs.
Yeah. So, for races, I normally will do like spring gels and goo. I actually just started eating goos this year in my races, and I never thought I would like them, but they've been working really well for me. So for Western States, I did gels the whole time and ate gels all up until mile or hour 18 and a half, pretty much. I think I was eating a gel with like 2 miles to go. So I think I have a pretty solid stomach as long as I eat early and eat often. That's always what I'm telling myself in a race. So I normally eat every 25 to 30 minutes in a race and try to take in 100 to 150 calories when I do. So normally just using those gels, and then I like some smoothies and pickles and some Dr. Pepper if it's a late in a race. But yeah, I think I've made it pretty easy for my crew lately. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna want my gels and smoothie, pickles, and Dr. Pepper, and that is it. So no solids.
And during training runs, do you train with your gels as well, or do you just eat whatever you can make for yourself?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this idea lately because it is, you know, all of the articles you read in ultra running, it talks about, you know, training with what you're going to race with. If you count the dollars spent in what I race with, you know, it's a spring gel is $3, a goo is $2. You're spending, you know, upwards of $100 to $150, $200 on like all the gels you need for a big race like Western States. So it's very out of touch, and like it's a privileged position to be able to train with all the nutrition that you're going to race with. So yeah, this past year I try to keep my calories similar in a training run, but I don't always train with what I race in, and I might be like a little more stingy about maybe I'm only eating every like 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm eating a bunch of Scandinavian swimmers from Trader Joe's. But yeah, this has been a really big like disconnect I've been recognizing lately in the trail running world, like, because maybe that is something that separates elites from sub elites from, you know, just any other runner. Like, they don't have access, and they might not have the monetary access to be able to fuel all their training runs and their races with, you know, scientifically proven gels. So yeah, it's tough because you want to race with, you want to train with what you race with, but I don't think that's always, it's not really always easy to do, really.
Maybe sometimes you don't want to, because by the time you get to your race, you might get tired. You get palate.
Exactly.
Fatigue, right? You're like, I don't want to take any more gels. I've been taking them throughout my whole training run. So maybe that is a strategy or something that we might have to look into. Don't just, you know, practice with a little bit, but maybe not your whole diet with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So ask a question. Do you rotate the stack of the height in your shoes, or do you wear the same model all the time?
Yeah, I usually wear the same model. Western States was actually the first race where I've ever changed my shoes. And that wasn't really intentional. It was just, I think I wanted something a little bit new, but I normally wear the S-Lab Ultra 3s. Mm-hmm. And I've worn those for all my longer races this year. And I love them. They're like, they're the shoe you just saw Courtney wear, run Hard mm-hmm. Rock in. And like, they're just such a great shoe. I switched into the Salomon Ultra Glides at, I think with 40 miles to go at Western States. Just, I wanted a little something different, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have pretty like decent feet when it comes to 100 miles, and I think as long, I've tried to like fine tune having a really good sock that I like and a good shoe combo. And like for Western States, you're wet a lot and your feet are wet and everything like that. So in my training runs, trying to mimic some of the things you experience on race day. But yeah, I wear a lot of different shoes in training, but then for racing, I really like the S-Lab Ultras.
Do you have other favorite shoes from Salomon?
They just came out with the Pulsar Trails, Trail Pro maybe. They're awesome. I've been wearing them a lot on my just like shorter runs that I've been doing since mm-hmm. Western States. And I had them as an option in Western States in case I wanted them. But they're great. I think they're pretty new as of the last couple months. And I think they'd be a great probably up to 50-mile shoe or so. Really comfy, good traction, and just a really great everyday trail shoe.
So you do change around, you're not just married to one shoe. You have a favorite shoe, but you kind of do change it around, and you know, you use different muscles on your feet when you do change your shoes. So that's a good thing when you do change your shoes around. We had a question here. It's a fun question. Mm-hmm. If you're only able to run the same race for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
Oh, that is a fun question. I love the Bear 100. I actually don't do a lot of races twice, and the Bear is one that I have done twice. It just feels like a homecoming to some degree. It's such a like historic race here in Utah where the entire community is out and about. And it's the end of September every year where the fall colors are just phenomenal. And you finish at Bear Lake. So your last like 5 to 10 miles, you're just overlooking like this crystal clear blue lake, and it's beautiful. And the weather isn't always great, but even on those years, it's an incredible experience. And super crew friendly, so you get to see your family and friends all day. It's a feel-good race, so I think that is one that's near and dear to my heart that I think I'd probably do every year if I could.
For anyone who's training for the Bear, what would you say, what would we tell them to focus? Like, what should their training, like top three things that they should really, you know, for sure include in their training plan for anyone interested in the Bear 100?
Yeah, I think if you're from a mountainous environment to begin with, I actually think you should focus a little bit more on running in your training, because there's a lot of runnable sections there. While there are some good climbs, but there's a lot that is actually runnable if you feel good. But I think if you don't come from a mountainous environment, then obviously focusing on your climbing is top priority for something like the Bear, because I think there's around 23,000 feet of climbing and descending. It's also pretty high. I think it gets up to somewhere between like 8,000 and 9,000 feet during the race. So that's a little tough to train for. But I also think just being prepared for all types of weather. Like when my mom came out last year to watch that one, and she was asking me how she should prepare to dress for this. And I said, well, you're going to have temperatures that are like 30 degrees and you're going to have upwards of like 85. So any clothing that you wear in those temperatures, bring that. But that is really what it is. Like, you get chilly in the evenings and it's really warm during the day. So knowing how to manage the heat, but then also being prepared to, you know, put a wool shirt and pants on in the evening and like a windbreaker when it's cold, or being prepared with, you know, rain layers and whatnot. So I think being able to prepare for all the weather conditions, I think that's key for the bear, because every year it's something different.
And if you were to tell Leah back in 2015, training for her first ultra, what advice would you give her? What are some learning lessons that you've learned in ultra running that you can tell her, hey, you know, these are good learning lessons that I've learned. Do not make these common ultra running mistakes.
Yeah. I think the one thing would be about just like fueling an ultra. It's such a black box when you first get into it, because you're almost, you try to get by on like as little as possible because, I don't know, you want to go fast and you shouldn't eat to go whatever. And it's like, no, that's actually the polar opposite. Like, I think something I learned probably halfway into my ultra running career was just like the value of fueling from the get-go in a race. And I think that has just like paid dividends. And I think that was definitely something I could have benefited from early on. Like, I would do a 50K and maybe carry like one gel with me and like hope for the best. Another thing I would have told myself was, and I think I held true to like this concept early on pretty well, was just like, you know, running, when I first started running, I thought like every time I ran, it had to be hard. It had to be like, I had to get a good workout in. I think these days I do, you know, 90% of my running easy, and it's never like, it's never killing me. It's, you know, it's very enjoyable. So I think early on in my running career, I also ran when I was in high school and whatnot. I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if I had told myself, like, you know, easy days easy, hard days hard, and really separated those two ideas from each other. Because I think sometimes they bleed into each other to this point where you're always just running this like moderate pace, and it takes some of the fun out of it, I think. I think those would have been like the two most valuable lessons that I would have loved to share with my younger self.
I think that's very important that you say, like, easy days easy, you know, hard days hard. I coach athletes, and sometimes mm-hmm. they're like, hey, I'm not improving. It's like, because you're going out all the time. Yes. Like, we need to step back a little bit. Yes. So that we can give yourself that body to improve, that space to improve.
Exactly.
So I saw a video of you, I think it was Gorge. Gorge race. That was the most impressive thing I've seen. So, and we want to talk a little bit about this. It's the pack swap, but
yeah,
pretty much you were in that aid station like less than a minute, seconds. You pretty much go in, give someone your pack, get the other pack, you like do a little dance, and then you bounce. Like, okay,
unplanned. Like, so we planned on swapping packs, but like, I did not imagine I could do it so like fluidly, and it just happened so nicely at that aid station, and I'm so happy my friend caught it on video, because it's been a game changer this year. Maybe it was after Bandera, or maybe at Bandera I started doing this, which was being able to have a second pack out there with you that your crew is filling up for you and then just handing to you at the next aid station, and then you're running away with that pack, and then they have your old one, and then they're filling that up at the next aid station. It's such a time saver. And I think if you know yourself well and know what you'll want, it works really well.
What's in the pack?
It's all the gels I'll need for the next section. So like, say it's a 3-hour section, it'd be like 9 gels and then a bottle of electrolytes and a bottle of water. And then I always have like a little baggie with like wipes and some salt tabs and, Imodium, because I have the worst stomach in the world. But yeah, I always have my med baggie, and I have it like, I write on it like med baggie number one. And then I've got my gels that are all in each pocket, and then my bottles. But yeah, that's usually it. There's not a lot in there. I keep it pretty consistent, and I try to communicate to my crew if like I'm sick of a gel or something, that, you know, take all of those out of my pack and substitute it with this. So they do a really good job, and my husband especially is a great crew, so he gets me.
When you switch the pack, is there any time when your crew looks at the pack and they're like, oh, she hasn't ate all her calories? Like, I think it's a great way for the crew to know.
Yeah.
I had your calories, right? They're like, half her.
It's actually usually the opposite. They're like, holy crap, she ate all of that.
So you calculate, yeah, save all your packages at the end of the race to see how much you you had to eat. But yeah, that was amazing. And I was like, that's such a great idea. Really, how efficiently, not just putting the fuel, but like you said, all your essential stuff, like, you know, your first aid, wipes, all that other little things that you'll need, just have it in every pack.
And yeah, it's really helpful. And like, that was actually a 50K that I did that in. And a lot of people will just run with like a handheld in a 50K. I train with a pack a lot, so I'm pretty comfortable using a pack. So I think especially for like as fast as 50Ks can go, you still want to be as quick as you can. So that's, yeah, it's super helpful.
There's a question here. Would you consider running a race like Badwater or 100+ miles for ultras?
Probably not Badwater. Like Western States, I actually fared pretty well in the heat, surprisingly. But yeah, I just road ultras just don't do it for me. I would maybe consider something over 100 miles, but probably not a 200 miler somewhere. Like, I think there's one up in Canada that's 120 miles. I'd probably do that. But probably not too much further. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Is Fat Dog 120 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you have no interest of the because they say the 200s are the new 100s.
Not for me. But I also said I would never do 100, so here we are. Yeah, I don't think I would do a 200, but maybe when I'm older, when I grow up.
Do you have a bucket list race of like that you really would love to do one day?
Yeah, I mean, I would love, so I'm signed up for UTMB this year, and I don't think we're going out for it, but I don't think I'll do that. I'd love to do that race someday and just complete the full loop around Mont Blanc. Love to get in Hard Rock, but I think that's just challenging each year with the number of female entrants that they let in. But I have to say, those are my two big ones. I don't know. There's so many exciting ones out there. We just went out to the Canary Islands this past year, and that was definitely a bucket list race for us prior to going there to do Trans Gran Canaria. So I think like trying to check off like new countries, it's exciting. But yeah, nothing that really, really stands out for me.
Do you have a favorite type of race?
Yeah, I think so. I really like, so I think I like 100Ks to 100 milers probably the best. Like, I like the 10+ hours, but probably less than like 20 hours. So that 10+ under 20 hour time range. And I really like anything that's slightly mountainous to some degree. So a lot of the races we have here in Utah, I think they play to my strengths quite a bit. But I've also done a lot of different things this year and like found some amount of joy in most of them, maybe besides Bandera. But that one was just like out of my wheelhouse and out of my comfort zone. But I had a lot of fun training for it. But yeah, it was fun in its own little way. And then Gorge was a pretty like runnable 50K with some climbing still. And I had a lot of fun there. So this year has definitely surprised me with like how much fun I've had in certain races that I wouldn't have.
Oh, we can't hear you. I think.
Are you there?
You're good. You're good now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost you for a second, but you're good. I don't think we missed anything. Okay. And Pablo said, never say never. That's true. You never know. Next thing you know, you're running around 240.
I know. That does look like a cool race.
It just depends. You know, it's a different type of running. Well, I never ran 200+ miles. So I can't tell the difference, but yeah. It's, based on what I've interviewed those that have run the 200+ mile, it's a different type of running. You know, it's definitely like it. And the longer the miles, the more training runs you have to do, or more longer miles, more shoes, more fuel.
Yeah, expensive.
I know we're getting towards the end of the podcast, and I want to thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate the time. I know time goes by so quickly.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I decided to do this podcast is because I feel like we need more women out on the trails, more representation. And there's one fear that, and I get this question a lot, I'm sure you get this question a lot, is that, you know, that fear of running alone on the trails if something happens. And you can share a little bit about your experience when you were 19, mm-hmm. when you were out on the trails, and kind of first I'll ask, like, how do you protect yourself when you're out on the trails?
Yeah, It's hard. So yeah, like you mentioned, I was attacked and sexually assaulted on the trails when I was 19, running in my hometown at knife point. Luckily, I was able to escape unscathed, but it was traumatic. And especially as a 19-year-old woman running alone in broad daylight, it's frightening because it's everything that you expected to be safe. So running in the daylight, running on a familiar trail, it was like pulled right out from underneath me. I'm like, okay, you are not as safe as you think you are. And it's sad that as a woman in society, you have to fear for your safety when you go out and exercise and you're doing something that you love and something that's beneficial for you. So it was definitely a difficult experience to return from. However, I will say the community that I found, and I think that's why I found like the ultra running community, and that's how I was really drawn to it, was I really wanted a community to run with, especially on the trails. When I came to Utah, I fell right into a great trail running community here where we'd have weekly runs. And I would say I had somebody to run with nearly all the time. And that definitely helped some of that fear dissipate over the years with running alone. But it doesn't go away. And I think anybody that has had a similar experience knows that too, that like there's always some amount of fear that you have when you're on the trails. And it'll even be a trail that I'm super familiar with out here. Like usually I have my few that I'm like, okay, I always feel safe when I'm on this trail, which, you know, that might even be a dangerous thought to have because, you know, maybe that's when bad things happen. But like, there's even times where like, I just fear the worst in most people when I see them on the trails. And if I'm nervous, I'm always like calling my husband, Mike, saying like, hey, I'm just calling you right now. I'm just going to keep you on the phone so I can get past this area. And then I'll be good. So I think for anybody that's had a similar experience, it's okay to not be okay. And it's okay to still be nervous about things, but it's also okay to like ask for help and ask buddies to run with you. Like I think a lot of my girlfriends know that I don't like to run alone. Therefore I have a lot of people always reaching out, like wanting to run with me. And same with my husband and whatnot too. So I think being open about how you feel, and why you feel that way is really important. And I think it brings people together more than anything. So that's my biggest advice if you've ever experienced anything like that, because it's tough. Like you don't want to have to carry pepper spray. You don't want to have to take a self-defense class to feel safe. Like we should not have to do those things. And it's unfortunate that like we're in a society where we do. So that's usually why I end up running with people most of the time. Like it fills my cup in many ways for those reasons.
Are there safety things you do to kind of protect yourself when you're out on the trails, or mainly just running with other people?
Yeah, running with other people. And then if I am running alone, letting somebody know where I'm running, how long I'll be running, when I should return. I always take my phone with me. Little things like that. I also have pepper spray and should take that with me more often than I do. But it's just funny, like living in Utah, a lot of people are like more concerned about wildlife out here, like mountain lions. I'm like, I'm afraid of people. I'm fine with the animals.
Yeah, same here. I always tell the same. It was like, I'm not scared. I'm like, I'm more, I'd rather go. So we have this mountain. It's called Mount Baldy. It's the highest mountain in LA County. Uh-huh. And I'd rather go there and run at the nighttime, like catch a sunset, than go to our local like Griffith Park or like yes. Our local park, because that's where people are like drinking and hanging out, like in the dry, like on the side of the road. Like I'm scared, but there's more people. That's, I don't want to run where there's more people.
No, exactly.
Run away from people. it's a, like an animal usually can scare it away. But thank you very much for sharing that. And I think that's very big, because a lot of women, they message me all the time, like, hey, I want to get into trail running. I can't find someone to trail run with. Or, you know, I'm scared of running by myself. Usually scheduling doesn't work with other people mm-hmm. they want to run with. And yeah, it's scary. And it does happen a lot of, you know, especially women, we're essentially vulnerable. And it sucks mm-hmm. to say that, because it's kind of like we are strong, we're powerful. Like we bring humans to this world. Yet, like we're treated like, a lot of times we're treated like an object. We're treated like, you know, something sexual. Mm-hmm. So, I want to bring this voice that it's okay to feel the way you feel and ask for help. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Absolutely. And I will add the caveat, like, I think a lot of like cities and towns have organizations like Trail Sisters and organizations like that who are trying to bring women together in small trail running communities. And I think, for example, here in the Wasatch, we have the Women of the Wasatch, which is now like nearly a 500 plus women only group that we have a group chat and we do trail runs, and it's a nice place. Like, beginners feel okay coming there because they're like, okay, everybody was me once. And people are just super open, and it's a community where like you feel safe and there's always somebody to run with. But I know like we're fortunate because we're in a bigger city and like smaller towns don't have that opportunity. Yeah. So it's tough.
What advice would you give to any woman that wants to get into trail running or ultra running, but is just scared? Or words of wisdom, encouragement?
Yeah. Oh, sign up for a race. I think like when I moved to Utah, I didn't know anybody. And I think in my first couple of weeks here, I signed up for, I think like two races within the first 3 weeks. And I met like a few of my like now very great friends, like those first 2 weeks in Utah, just at a race and putting yourself outside of comfort zone, because like the community you want to be a part of is more often than not at these races. And if you don't want to sign up for the race, you can always sign up to volunteer. I did a lot of that in my first couple years out here with maybe being a pace. I think I was a pacer at the Wasatch 100, paced somebody I didn't even know, but it was a great experience. So little things like that. I think there's ways to get involved with the community that can kind of expose you to ultra running and trail running. And I think volunteering, crewing, and pacing are all great ways to do that if you're not quite ready to bite the bullet and sign up for a race yourself.
If someone's interested in signing up for a race, what's the website that we sign up races for?
Yeah, I normally, I'll go to ultrasignup.com. And then I also like to go to Ultra Running Magazine has a great calendar on their website where you can filter by like distance, like state, region, like time of the race, et cetera. There's so many things you can filter by, how hard do you want it to be? So usually I'm going on one of those two races to find my next one.
Thank you. And my last question is, what has ultra running taught you?
I think it's taught me about resilience. I think there's always, like, I can always dig a little bit deeper than I think I can. And I think it's given me perspective with, like, my life problems and whatnot, and, like, anything with, like, physical health, mental health, et cetera. I think I've learned through ultra running that, like, we're a lot more resilient as humans than we think we are. And we can do very hard things, and we can undergo challenges and come out of the other side with a lot of lessons learned and quite a bit stronger. So I think that's something I value a lot about ultra running, because it's more than just exercise. I think there's just endless amounts that you can learn from the sport.
And how do you push through that? Like, how do you push when you're in that pain cave, where you're in that, you're stepping outside your comfort zone? How do you push through that? What has it helped you get that little bit more uncomfortable?
Yeah, I think having some positive mantras. I think there's a lot of science on positivity when you're running and in endurance sports in general. So having good mantras that you can tell yourself, like I always tell myself, like, you belong and like you are strong. And just those little positive affirmations that I can repeat to myself really encourage me to keep going. And then I always have like some other like positive memories to dip into in my memory bank during these races that bring me to a happy place. So I think when I can do those things, it often brings me out of like a little dip in energy or a low point. Yeah, I have a 2-year-old nephew, and I always sing songs to him over FaceTime. So I swear half my races are just like reciting those songs in my head. So they bring me some joy.
To do hard things is one of them. What's another like your go-to mantra?
Oh, I've got a few for like different points in the race. So my one sister has this stupid phrase she used to tell me before some of my races, which was super, super chill, which is always what I tell myself in the beginning of a race because I never want to be going too fast. So I just always repeat that to myself. And then this past year, you belong has been one that I've been telling myself a lot of. And it could mean a variety of things, but like, I think when I start to get complacent in a race, it really pushes me to that next level of, you can step outside of your comfort zone and you can compete, and you belong right up on the front line with all those other women. So just giving yourself a chance and recognizing that, like you could set limitations on yourself. So like, let's break away from those limitations that you're like unknowingly setting yourself up for. And because like you belong, you're just as strong as anybody else out there. So I think that like anybody can adapt that, and it's a really positive thing. And I think it always pushes you to the next step and pushes you through some of those low points.
Thank you so much, Leah. This is amazing. You shared so much information today. And if anybody joined late or later on, I will be uploading this on, I do have the podcast is officially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the main podcast platforms. So you can download it later on. You can share it on Facebook. You can share it in Instagram. But thank you so much, Leah, for sharing so much information. I was listening to your previous interviews and I was really trying to just get to know you more and know more about who you are and why you do what you do. And I think today that's really what you shared. And we were able to get a kind of more of understanding of why you run and what keeps you motivated. And it seems like that you do it because you love it and you're just out there pushing yourself and challenging yourself and just seeing what you're capable of, but just for the fun of it. And I think that's probably is one of the reasons why it has helped you, you know, continue to grow, because it's not you versus anybody else but yourself. And as you continue to believe in yourself and continuing to tell yourself that you can do it, aside from the obstacles that come along the way, you're not giving up. So I want to thank you for being a positive role model in our community, for showing us that what is possible, and for showing us that there's not just one way of becoming a professional runner. There's different ways to go about it. So thank you so much for joining me today and for taking the time to answer some questions and talking to me and everyone here today.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. And I appreciate all your questions. Definitely good ones that I never get. So I love this.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone who joined us today. We were very excited. Again, if you joined later on, I will save this later on so you can listen to the whole thing or during a commute or anything else. So, Leah, thank you again. And I hope everyone has a good night.
Bye. Thank you. We'll see ya.